And welcome back, everybody. It's another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 751. Got a first-timer joining us on the show. It's been a while. We used to do a lot of first-timers, and we're back at it here. He's first-timer on the show, but not too many people around the fantasy baseball world, because you can find him over at pitcherlist.com, who every listener knows that big fans over there at pitcherlist.com. He is the 2025 FSWA Research Article of the Year Award winner. You can find him on Twitter at underscore Nate Schwartz. Nate Schwartz, how are we doing, my friend?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on. Happy to be here.
Yep. Looking forward to this tremendously. Before we get started, like I always tell everybody, plug what you got going on at PitcherList, whatever you put out recently, whatever you want to talk about in your content world.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm on Twitter or X at underscore Nate Schwartz, where I'm tweeting about all things baseball, primarily the Cardinals and my complaints there. But, you know, I do like to touch on everyone and everything. It's not just a team specific follow. And then at PitcherList, I'm writing kind of weekly, just deep dives into kind of players, stats, all of the fun stuff, not necessarily purely fantasy oriented, but it's meant to be kind of, you know, one step deeper than the surface level stats, make you think, hopefully, you know, discover something new that, you know, you walk away from an article that's you're a little more intrigued on a player or a topic than you were before. So, you know, just trying to keep that going, especially in the dog days of draft season, and then going into once the regular season kicks off.
Yes, we are in the dog days, a couple of weeks to go before all things are said and done and the pencil's down and we see where the dust settles. I'm going to ask you this question, and trust me, Nick's not listening, I promise. Because I've seen your list of content on what you like, your topics per se, your players per se. We're going to talk Process Plus, which is obviously a hitting-centric stat. Do you like hitters or pitchers more?
Pitchers, by far.
I thought I'd have you.
No, yeah, no, I am. Grew up playing baseball. I was a funky lefty pitcher through and through, dedicated to the craft. And as I've come into the analysis, I find it easier to understand pitching more than I do hitting. But, you know, as we'll get into, that's not to say I don't know some hitting, at least a little bit.
You do know some, that's for sure. And from one lefty to another, I appreciate the craftiness that you're hinting at there. So good stuff indeed. Let's get to it. Let's talk Process Plus. I told you off air, like I've had Kyle Bland on a couple of years talking the PLV side of things and how that keeps developing year after year. And I always give like joke with him and meeting him in person for a couple of years now. I always go, it's big brain Bland. Because here he comes with another idea coming down the road. But then this Process Plus comes along. So kind of give us the backstory of how this came to be and then where it went with your article on kind of explaining what it is.
Yeah, so I mean, Process Plus is the continuation of pitch level value or PLV. So, you know, this is really all Kyle's kind of brainchild here. I was, you know, mostly just kind of asking questions in the putting pen to paper process of getting the article out and explaining it. So it's the best way to really see Process Plus is that it's expected WRC plus. So as I said, it's built on PitcherList's PLV. So we have, it's, you know, our version of a stuff and location quantifier. So given, you know, the metrics of a pitch, you know, shape, velocity, extension, release point, and the location, you know, in the zone, wherever, we give it a grade on a scale of 1 to 10 or 0 to 10. And obviously that's useful on the pitching, you know, analysis side of things, but then we and Process Plus turn it around and use it on the hitting side. So, you know, we're able to understand, you know, how good is a hitter doing with a certain pitch. Like you will get more run value created for hitting a homer on a 100-mile-an-hour fastball on the corner than you will for doing the same on a 90-mile-an-hour fastball down the middle. So we can, you know, we do that with ability to make contact, ability to hit for power. And then also I think arguably the most powerful tool is decision-making. So, you know, it's not like WRC plus where that just takes the result of an at bat, you know, WRC plus only reflects, you know, what you did with the ball in play or a walk or a strikeout or whatnot. But Process Plus really, you know, no pitch goes unnoticed. So it's really identifying, you know, what is the true talent of a hitter. It takes the run value of the, you know, contact ability, power, and decision making, puts it all into one, and there's your process plus number. And it, you know, it's on a scale equal to WRC plus or any of your other plus stats, where 100 is league average, anything above is better, and anything below is worse.
Yeah, it's a stat that I'm really starting to, well, usually I always kind of let you guys do these articles and play with them some more, because, you know, we hear about these things in the Discord, like, hey, this is kind of something we're working on, like you mentioned, and then you guys do all the heavy lifting for the cavemen like myself, and then I get to enjoy it. And one thing I really like about these recent projections between the PLV tool plus the projections that come with the PLV, now you got the process plus, you were talking about it, it's a pitch by pitch basis, but not just like a pitch type, which I like about it. It's like location, it's velocities, it's all these different aspects to it, because you already said you played baseball growing up. I played baseball growing up. Anybody that played ball knows that like a 2-0 pitch down the middle compared to a 1-2 pitch on the corner, you could still get a single on both of them, but those are two completely different pitches, and your grades in these different formulas will, if, correct me if I'm wrong, will kind of you'll get different grades based on the difficulty and the ease of certain things. That's like the layman's terms to it.
Yeah, but, that's correct.
Yeah, but that's like one thing I like about it is it takes it on such a like a precise level of what it is, instead of just saying, hey, this guy's at bat resulted in a double. Like, okay, that's cool. Like, that's helpful. It's not helpful, but to dig deeper on it, and that's how you can probably correlate the actual skill set of a player, per se, a lot more. So when we're looking at process plus here, so you mentioned there's the three caveats of decision, contact, and power metrics. And again, I've really enjoyed tinkering. I haven't done a lot. I love when you guys tweet out pictures of all the cool app things with this, because it's really visual in that regard. But can you kind of break down, just if you want briefly or deep, I don't care, all three of those little pockets and then how it all comes together? I know you kind of mentioned it, but can you break it down a little bit for us?
Yeah, so they're obviously the three, the most powerful for overall process plus being power, because I know I kind of alluded to it earlier, but process plus takes the run value of each single action, whether it be a decision, you know, putting the ball in play or hitting for power, and hitting for power is, you know, drives the most run value. So, you know, guy gets on a hot streak, cranks out a bunch of home runs, like that will influence his process plus and obviously his results more than anything. So that has the biggest effect. And then both contact and decision-making have similar amounts of influence, because decision-making, you know, there isn't a lot of value in each decision, but they accrue quickly. You know, you're looking at 3 to 4 decisions made per at bat kind of on average. And, you know, compared to one potential batted ball event per at-bat, if even, those take a little bit longer. So we take all three of those, and as you said, it comes into this overall number, and that overall number is directly reflective on average how good is that player? How good is their process? I really find the most utility from this by identifying who is, obviously, like most things, you know, who's underperforming, who's overperforming. But it's really interesting because this can identify a new kind of archetype of player that you don't see by just your standard comparisons. Because what happens is you'll see someone who's making great decisions and just not tapping into the power or not tapping into the contact. And you're like, oh, something might be there that, you know, you're not identifying with even your things like whiff rate or, you know, other batted ball contact. You can really see what a player is doing under the hood. And it's, you know, rather than wasting the time, I don't want to say wasting because all analysis is usually good player analysis, but, you know, rather than trying to go across three different sites and find all the stats you want to find, seeing one number, especially early in the season, once things start to stabilize, is really, really powerful in identifying how good is a player, are they underperforming, overperforming, whatever, and then being able to act on it or, you know, start like have a good place to start the deep dive. You know, I saw that this player is making way worse decisions this year than last year. Is that something I think is going to stick? You know, probably not, you know, gives a good buying opportunity. So really it just, you know, it comes down to identifying the holistic view of a hitter and being able to, you know, use it more easily than I think, you know, we can identify hitters currently.
Yeah, a couple things you mentioned there I find very fascinating, because again, if we just use the basic WRC plus, and I'm going to compare it to that because that's what it's comparable to. I'm not saying it's a bad metric, and Nate didn't say, he said it's a fine metric too. I just want to clarify that now before we keep going through this cycle. But like WRC plus, just one number, like we've said, and if a guy's got a down, like if it's an 88 WRC plus, a 76, you're trying to figure out what went wrong, might take a long dive, not just a deep dive. Where I like what you were saying about the three different samples, the player could still be doing good in two out of the three facets of it. But then that one other part, maybe it's decision or whatever, like you mentioned, stands out so much more. You can look directly to that. And maybe there's something to, this is why the player is struggling, or maybe this is where they can improve. And it's an easier improvement in category A, B, or C, or something along those lines. In regards to that, though, and you mentioned how the process plus can help identify some players that maybe usually aren't on the radar, I guess. What's the sample size? Because when we talk, again, like a WRC plus or a lot of metrics, it's like one at bat. But when we're talking process plus, it could be six pitches in an at bat or something like that. So how do we use a sample size in process plus? Like, does it become more viable earlier than other metrics is what I'm getting at.
It's all in the same relative range when it comes to the stabilization. Decision-making and contact ability stabilize at 400 pitches faced, which is around the 100-ish at-bat threshold, which, again, you're looking at, you know, around a month or so, which is about, or maybe, you know, slightly ahead of where other things start to stabilize, but it's all relatively around the same spot. And then power, because there are just such fewer batted ball events that affect that, it stabilizes after 900 pitches. And that, you know, anecdotally makes sense. You get a better idea, you know, for who a hitter is based on their ability to, you know, make decisions and make contact. Like, that isn't something that necessarily changes, you know, from one day to the next, but the power might, you know. What's stopping a player from squaring up, you know, two extra balls that get out of the park when it's, you know, 10 degrees warmer in May than April than, you know, anywhere else. So it's all relatively in the same kind of stratosphere as other stats, but I think it's more powerful in that it creates this more all-encompassing view of a hitter that you don't necessarily get all at the same time elsewhere.
Yeah, I'm definitely on board with that. We'll get back to some of the questions of the outline in a minute, but I'm going through the article and just wanted to like ask you maybe some questions on some of like the charts we see in this, kind of how do you utilize this situation. It's like you have a Juan Soto chart, you have a chart graph, I apologize. Aaron Judge, like you see the powers through the roof, where Soto on the flip side has just amazing decision skills. I'm not saying Judge doesn't, but the color coding differentiates. Now, we've mentioned you add all three up and that gives you your number that you're looking for in process plus. Like, I wanted to scroll down to Mark Vientos is down here because this stood out to me. Or, yeah, we'll get to some. Let's go to Mark Vientos here first because it showcases the power through the roof, like, the whole time. But then it shows, like, there's some decisions that aren't always the best, and the contact skills are kind of, you know, not ideal is the best way I'm going to put these things. So you see, let's just say around a little before July 15th on this chart, you see the contact skills is down around 83 or whatever. But then you got all the way up to the power, you're getting closer to 120. How do we utilize something looking at that where we see there's a massive, like, you know, potential problem in the contact skills, but the power is ridiculous. So when you mix contact, we know it's great. But when you look at that, the bar graph, how do we like analyze that, I guess?
Yeah, so I think Vientos is a great, you know, a great guy to utilize as identifying as like an archetype of a player. This is a guy who's got this great batted ball profile, hits the ball really hard, but, you know, whiffs a lot, doesn't make the best decisions. And you see that in his process plus chart. So, you know, he's a guy, especially as the year went on, he hit for more and more power. And obviously it took a while for a lot of people, I think even the Mets included, to believe in the breakout. And I think you kind of see that in his chart. He stopped, you know, at the beginning of the year, he was making around like league average, if not slightly above league average, contact and decisions. And I think, you know, he has the great power, kind of sacrificed that contact and decision-making. He's like, I'm going to be way more aggressive, not make the best decisions, and trust that I have the power to overcome those shortcomings. And that clearly worked for him, whereas it hadn't worked in early in the year or in years past. I think this also makes me identify Vientos as a player who's potentially more volatile. I see 2 out of 3 things are bad, and generally knowing that power is the most, you know, shaky of the three categories. Like, if he has a, you know, a drought on hitting homers or driving the ball, you know, he isn't going to be doing much else. And I know you can identify that a lot, you know, through other stats, but being able to quickly see, you know, he's got great power, but not only are the decisions average, they're actually bad. So that this would kind of make me put a red flag on Vientos for 2025, for example. Whereas if you look at Xavier Edwards in the article, he is the chart just above. And there's obviously a smaller sample here, but he's got great decisions, great contact. And yeah, he's not going to hit for a lot of power, but I don't think he's as volatile. He makes good decisions and can put bat to ball. So he's in a position where, you know, his floor might be a little bit safer than a guy like Vientos. Even, you know, they have completely different abilities, but from a true talent of a hitter, I would like my, I'd prefer to have a guy like Xavier Edwards over a guy like Vientos.
Yeah, and I'm with you. That's why I was going to go next to Edwards. That's perfect. You hit on that because it's a total flip side now. Like the power is below the 100, but the other stuff, the decisions and the contacts are higher. So that is very, very intriguing. Right below Vientos, I want to ask you about Pete Crow Armstrong, because this is a name, and we'll get back to more of the analysis and Process Plus, but these stuck out to me. So PCA is a very, very popular name this draft season, as you know. He's actually having a really good spring as well. So when we're talking about Process Plus being a predictive of future WRC Plus, I guess, how do we look at a guy like PCA, who people like a lot, but then you look at his 2024 Process Plus and he's below average in every category and is like overall Process Plus got as low as almost 50 at one point in the season. So how do we, I know it's also young players who there's a lot of volatility there, I guess, but just looking at that 1 year sample, how do we go about analyzing PCA?
Yeah. So this was actually pretty funny. I was looking at kind of hitters at the bottom of the barrel to identify, you know, who's someone not doing good at it. And as a, you know, pretty big Cardinal fan and a general guy who was not in on PCA, I thought this would be a great opportunity to identify a player who was struggling that, you know, I wasn't necessarily opposed to. Naturally, right after this article hit publish, he went on his hot streak over the summer.
Never fails, a great jinx.
And looking at the rest of his season in Process Plus, which isn't identified in the article, he started making, and it was really the only time he ever did, above average contact. And the power kind of came with it, and then the power stuck at the end of the year. But, you know, this kind of shows, and then at the end of the year, his contact just fell off a cliff. And that's why I'm still worried about him in 2025, even though, you know, he's had this great spring. I think Process Plus is really powerful for looking at young players so you can identify growth. I really like, you know, seeing a player, you know, it's one thing to see them have this constant success right when they get called up. That's what we all want. But seeing a player struggling at first and then, you know, figuring it out a little bit, you know, is like, he sees what big league pitching looks like. It's like, okay, I got to adjust X, Y, and Z. And all of a sudden, he's making more contact. He's tapping into a power. That's what development looks like. And that's encouraging. Again, for PCA, his contact completely fell off a cliff at the end of the year. And I think he's just going to continue to be this uber volatile player. I think he's going to have some hot streaks. I don't think the batted ball quality generally is phenomenal. And he has pretty scary decision-making. And obviously, you know, there could be a skills change in there as we've seen this spring. But, you know, I think the bump we got from him late last year is not something that's going to stick.
Yeah, I'm with you. That's why I saw that and I'm like, huh, that's a pretty telling little graph there. I love how you mentioned that because I've been doing this for a long time and it never fails that something's going to take place shortly thereafter. Like Ryan Bloomfield, my co-host from Bubba and the Bloom, he's in our Discord and the last two speculator articles, we for HQ, you put it out a day early to the editor and so on and so forth. And he, back-to-back weeks, one of the main targets in his article, something completely flips in spring training the next afternoon. So it never fails. Never fails.
Yeah. I had written about Zebby Matthews and, you know, I was one day after publishing, he goes down with some sort of injury and it's like, here we go. It never fails.
Yep. Never does. Couple things before we get back on track here is, we mentioned Xavier Edwards has a small sample size and then we could go obviously the full season. When you utilize Process Plus, and again, there's going to be a lot of playing around with this. It's really only been going for a year, basically. Maybe a little over behind the scenes with Kyle, but we've only really been toying with it for about a season, it feels like. What kind of sample size on the tool are you looking at? I know you said 100 at-bats, 400 pitches is kind of where you start to feel things, but you have a full season. Like, what do you want to look at to kind of – guys talk about rolling graphs on FanGraphs, per se, and they look at, you know, 30 games, 60 games, so on and so forth. What are you looking for in like a Process Plus where you feel like, okay, this is a viable change?
It's generally, I'll still look at about the rolling 400-ish pitches generally. So even if that includes a power spike, that might not necessarily be true. That is usually really key in identifying contact and decision-making. And then, you know, if you're looking at a rolling chart or looking at, you know, data over a longer subsect of time, you can kind of piece together if you believe the power or if you don't. What I find most interesting within that 400 pitches rolling face, the kind of pitcherless, you know, plethora of apps we have, again, PLV based and all feeding into Process Plus, but based kind of, you know, adjacent to that, is just the general swing aggression and pitch hittability and stuff like that that are a little bit outside the arms of all-encompassing stat where you need to see it. But, you know, sometimes you can see a guy's Process Plus, you know, tick up, and the reason could either be in some cases he got more aggressive and sometimes he got more passive. So being able to play around with kind of a handful of stats and, you know, find the story that's actually being told is, I feel like, a really valuable tool, especially when I'm not necessarily looking at stats that are fully publicly available. Obviously these are available through the PitcherList Pro subscription, but it's not like these are, you know, right up there on the FanGraphs pages or the PitcherList player pages. So I'm looking at data that looks a little bit different, and then I can go into my player pages and the stats I want to see, you know, is stuff lining up with what I want to see, you know, are the counts looking all great, or, you know, is this something that, you know, I'm completely missing something here.
That makes a lot of sense. And like, to your point of, can you see if a spike's good enough or not? Like, just, we won't get into it, but the next one down was Brent Rooker on there. And the way he finished, you saw the contact decision and everything just continued to go with the power pretty much for the vast majority of that last third of that chart. So definitely something that checks out with the way things went there. All right. So we've kind of said it, I guess, but I don't know if there's an actual like strategy to this, but how do you use Process Plus, I guess, to, like, let's start with end season. So when you were writing this last year, it was your graphs were for basically June, July, August for the most part, maybe a little before June. So how are you utilizing that information to maybe make changes in season for you?
I'm using it to check up on, you know, a bunch of the players that I'm either worried about in production or interested in adding. You know, it's almost in my mind like pulling up a player page to get an idea for a player. And instead of having to look specifically, it pulls up, you know, it pulls up the story of the season, which I find very valuable, especially as I learned later in the season, to make sure that, you know, was there something legitimate here, or did this guy just get hot for the right amount of time? And, you know, the decision making suggests he's going to fall off a cliff. I'm using it right now for draft season, like on the pitching side. I've got the all player stuff plus, like, nicely highlighted, you know, along with their projected stats. But I have process plus on the hitting side, even though my projections, I'm using the pitcherless projections, which are, you know, built on PLV. Having that number right there, you know, makes me feel stronger about a decision, even if that's not necessarily getting baked into the overall projection, or I'm trying to buy a floor, or, you know, you've been avoiding Corbin Carroll a lot this year in the first round because his process plus last year was only 103. And I know he was hurt a lot and that sapped a lot of power, but I want a guy who's like 120, 130, you know, a really kind of upper echelon hitter, even while providing stolen bases in that first round.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I like that. That's a whole other, I haven't heard of anybody using process plus in, because I haven't talked to anybody using process plus in the draft. That's a sound strategy to it, because some people just look at projections in general, and most projections still have Corbin Carroll playing well, and I'll most know I'm biased because I am a Corbin Carroll stan. But if you're sticking to the process plus, it makes sense to everything you're saying of what, because even there was no power last year, there's a lot of struggles there. I wonder if, as we continue to do this year after year with process plus, is when we know players are experiencing injuries, be it a wrist, be it a shoulder or whatever, and we see those like decreases or whatever. And the thing is, if we find a way to, I don't know, you can't build it in, obviously, but at least when we analyze it, this is like a trend in the graph type thing, if that makes sense at all. I'm probably just talking.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think this was great. I was looking into Nolan Arenado earlier this year, and his decision making, you know, was relatively stagnant. Like, it didn't go one way or the other last year. He just, I really think, was like hurt all season and didn't go on the IL. You know, had enough swings where he could put enough oomph into it, where the like bat speed data all lined up, where people weren't necessarily worried about that. But you could see that he was just doing everything the same, except he just was not hitting for the power that he wanted. And he's, you know, that's a way of identifying an injury. Because, you know, a player's decision making is, you know, it's been baked into them for the 20 something years ish they've been playing baseball. And that's not necessarily going to change, especially for a 30 something year old veteran. That's something where, you know, you can see, did they just like, was there a cold spell in power? Why was that? Were they battling injuries? And, you know, Corbin Carroll, I'm avoiding, but, you know, if he's fully healthy, is his process plus, you know, 120 potentially. I just see the number, you know, significantly lower than the rest of the first round group. And I'm generally steering clear, just almost on principle, out of fear of messing up a first round pick.
Yeah, I get it. I wasn't knocking it at all, because I respect the, if you're going in with your plan and you're probably using it the whole draft. So like, it's my, like, if you believe in something, you got to like put your money where your mouth is type thing. And that's what you're doing. So like, that totally makes sense. And that'll check off all the boards. But I like the Arenado thing you mentioned, because it's like when bat speed came out on StatCast, we're like, okay, this is a really cool tool, but how do we compare it to, like, there's no previous comparisons. So we got to kind of build off of it. So then we can be like, okay, this guy was hurt, that's why it was here. Or, hey, he's getting older, so we're seeing this decrease, so on and so forth, as we can kind of analyze things. And I think it's what we can do with process plus is, yeah, okay, his decision making was the same, his contact skills were pretty good, but the power just dropped. Why? Like, why? So that is a very, very fond way to look at it, for sure.
Yeah, I'll just add, it's because we have a lot of this on the pitching side, and I think this is really the one of the first things, along with the bat speed additions to Savant, where you can get kind of the more under the hood look at, is a hitter doing something different, and are they hurt? Because with the pitcher, you usually immediately see it in, you know, pitch velocity, or is their arm slot dropping, or you know, the ball's leaving their hand, and we have all these numbers on the pitcher where we can identify, you know, are they not doing what they've done before? Whereas hitting, you know, a player could have a max exit velocity for 2 weeks and 95 and nothing could actually be wrong. That could just be how it's going. So, you know, being able to identify the injured players of the world, or, you know, someone who's struggling or trying to make a swing change, I think is just a very valuable tool in season.
100%. And it's one reason I love this tool, this metric, for one, the tool to utilize on the graph, because visuals, obviously most people, visuals will stand out and you can see things here, but you're using three key concepts to analyzing a player where, you know, if we go to the Pitcherless player page or we go to the Fangraphs page, whatever, you know, if you're looking for, you know, plate discipline, you're looking at like chase rates or swinging, like that kind of stuff. If you're looking for contact, you're looking at swinging strike rates, like all these different factors for power. You're like, it's either slugging, OPS, whatever you want to look at for your slugging category. But this is all intertwined, so you can just see one picture and you can already tell potentially like where the biggest weakness is on this player. And I think that's so then your deeper dive, like you've already mentioned, like you could look at it, then you go to your page and you start seeing if it all matches up with what you're looking at. And that's what I love about it. Like you could literally just, I told Kyle with PLV, and this would work for Process Plus. I said, hey, if you guys could just make like a book where I could flip pages and just see each player's page, and then I could know exactly what player I want to go to without having to click, you know, each button to go to it. That'd be awesome. Like a PDF file of last year's each player. I'm like, okay, this one stands out as weird. Let's go click on, you know, Sedane Rafaela and see what's going on here. Like that'd be pretty cool. But that's what I like about it, is it incorporates more than just one thing to look at, where it is not just, you know, three stats that symbolize the same thing. It's three different things.
Exactly. So
that's what I love about it.
And it's nice because in the fantasy world, and once we get in season, you are looking at, you know, it's almost hard to keep up with, yep, you know, with your fab bids and your own players. You know, if you don't have the time to fully send the deep dive that you want to, getting, you know, one holistic number that isn't fully results based is just so, so, so valuable. And I think puts you way ahead of the competition, just in terms of time spent on analyzing the player pool.
Now, this might be just too big of a, it's either galaxy brain or dumb brain. I don't know what side of the spectrum this is on here, but we were like talking about this. So I'm thinking, okay, so again, three metrics make up this. I call them metrics. They probably, it's not the term to use, but again, not the smartest guy in the room here. But you have three things making it Process Plus. And we use, say it's a 120 Process Plus, but we've looked at certain guys have like a massive power, but then, you know, the contacts and decisions are down here. Is there ever going to be a world where you think it might be helpful to, and maybe it's there and I've missed it, apologies now, but say like you see Corbin Carroll, let's use him. And then you see a number for decision, a number for contacts, or a number for power, whatever. And then it's overall Process Plus in this column. Like there's four columns, essentially. The three numbers that make it up. Do you think that's ever a world we'll see? So then it's also a visual plus a numerical?
I think it's definitely possible. Yeah, I kind of see what you're saying.
Yeah, again, I'm not great at this stuff. That's why I like you guys doing
hard work. The way we have it broken out on our rolling charts is you can see individually the rolling charts for all three components: decision making, contact, and power, which can get you to your Process Plus, and you can break it out specifically. The way I like to use that is I will, you know, all three will get downloaded into an Excel. And then if I just kind of filter, like if I'm looking at players, you know, who has above average decision making and above average contact. And when I've done that, the player that continues to pop, and I'm so sad that he got hurt, with Spencer Horwitz. He showed up on these lists with like Vlad Jr., Fernando Tatis, Kyle Tucker. It's like, who does all of the right things? And he kept showing up. And I was so ready to buy him just about everywhere until his wrist injury. I think he's out for like 8 weeks or something like that. But it's just a great tool to kind of whittle down the archetypes of players. Who do you want to identify? What kind of player are you looking for? And this usually, more often than not, lends you to the answers you might be looking for.
Perfect. Perfect. And I like that idea, the way you're utilizing it there too, as to make standouts as well. All right. Let's bring it back here. How well did it fare? I know that all the data stuff, they back test it and they compare it to other things and all this. How well did it, because again, one of the big talking points is it's a better predictor than WRC plus in theory of the player's skill. So how well did it work in the back testing? And I guess he's had to have tested how 2024 turned out. So how did that look as well, if you know that information?
Yeah, so I don't have the full 24 specific numbers in front of me, but I do know that Process Plus outpredicted WRC Plus in terms of predicting next year's WRC Plus, which was using 2020 to 2023 data. So WRC Plus for looking to next year's WRC Plus had an R squared of 0.23. So about 23% of the data was fully explained by that. Whereas with Process Plus, it explained next year's WRC Plus by 0.29. And within itself, Process Plus has a 0.45 R squared, which is pretty sticky in terms of the world of baseball stats. All in all to say, if you're looking to guess what a player's WRC Plus is going to be in the following year, you are better off using Process Plus than WRC Plus. That folks, felt like a lot of pluses.
Trust me, I doing the First Pitch podcast for 2 years, promoting it was plus, like, yeah, I got yeah. you. I feel you there, man. But yes, to get that stuff, you must go to pitcherlist.com and become a PL Pro member, which is worth it. Worth it. All the cool stuff they have there. I never can remember it all because there's a ton of it, and it's all very, very awesome. You've been digging in, obviously. Like you said, you're drafting with it, so that's obviously cool. What are some of the players that Process Plus is really liking in 2025 that, I don't know if surprise is the right word, but like maybe stood out to you going, hey, they're pretty high on this guy that didn't seem that high to me initially?
Yeah, so the first two, unfortunately, when I really kind of dug into the player pool, the rest of the drafting world kind of agreed with me, which is unfortunate. But the first being Lawrence Butler. I think we saw a legitimate improvement in his batted ball, his ability to make contact and his decision-making. And that in turn led to just the insane amounts of power that we saw. I mean, obviously his power, you know, run like in August won't stick, but his decision-making went from like 10th percentile in the beginning of the year to I think like 80th by the end of the year. And I just, you know, the more and more I looked at it, I was like, I think this is a guy who is going to stick around with these skills for the foreseeable future. And if anything, the Athletics inking him to like a 7-year deal suggests that they see the same.
Yeah, we love the law dog in these parts. So a full season with him could be a big time plus. But I'm with you. Sadly, everybody else loves him as well. So who else are you looking at?
Yeah. Again, and I'll touch on him quickly, but Wyatt Langford.
My guy, yeah.
Yeah, I know everyone loves him, and you know his price is just getting more and more insane by the day. But the most interesting thing is that I was looking at his decision-making against off-speed pitches, and it was just, you know, as the year went on, it was just this steady increase. He was slowly getting better as the year went on. It was one of those things, like it was great that he popped at the end of the year, but I almost wish that a lot of what he did didn't happen because all of the under the hood changes were occurring already. And I think whatever 2025 is going to be was happening regardless. Obviously, it's great to have seen him put it together, but I just really think you're looking at a potential first rounder in 2026 and that, you know, he does all of the right things. And Process Plus agreeing with that is, I think, pretty rare because, you know, a lot of these young players you're taking earlier in drafts than you should, you have to kind of assume the skills change. Whereas with Langford, I think the skills are already there. And, you know, that's probably why he's as expensive as he is.
A couple things on Langford to use with this real quick is if you're using Process Plus out the gate and you were one of the degenerates like myself, we start drafting in like November, then you would have really benefited because he was like a 10th round pick then. Like people were not liking him as much, but then it's obviously where it's at now is pretty crazy, but probably accurate at the same time. So that's interesting. But to your point, you said decision versus off-speed pitch. So I want to kind of whittle, like take a couple steps back here. So obviously when you're looking at Process Plus, you saw his decision-making skills. Did you see like a dip in that that made you want to dig deeper into what his decision process was, or what led you to looking at his off-speed decisions and other things with Wyatt Langford?
Yeah, so I wrote an article about him and Lars Nootbaar a couple weeks ago about how they are not like Juan Soto, which should be intuitive. It's practically impossible to be like Juan Soto. But in the sense that they all have this really good out-of-zone decision value. They don't chase a lot, but Langford and Nootbaar had horrendous in-zone decision value, whereas Juan Soto was just about league average. But he has this amazing power, so, you know, basically, you make a mistake, and Juan Soto is crushing it. And the argument for Langford is that he's a guy that, you know, has been really passive and has shown this good feel for the zone, but he hasn't fully taken advantage of it. So I was just looking at his swing aggression on breaking balls, which were kind of his main pitch type that he wanted to do damage against, I believe. I might be wrong there, but I don't have the article up in front of me. So I'll need to double check. But he slowly got more and more aggressive as the year went on, while not necessarily losing anything in overall whiff rates or decision-making generally against breaking ball pitches or breaking pitches. So he slowly showed this improvement where he was getting more aggressive. And then finally, in September, he was able to pounce and tap into the power as his decisions were always good, but then it got to a point where he was actually able to benefit from them. And this was kind of the overall face of the article. It was, you know, Langford and Nootbaar are players that are too passive. They have this great batted ball profile, and even if they lose a little bit on how hard they hit the ball frequently, they can take that trade-off because just the amount of production they will create is just so much more than it currently is.
No, I like that. That's it's something like briefly discussed on Sonata when I look at players, and when I start digging in deeper, it's like, you know, their swing rate in the zone or like their swing, whatever, like you see them walking a lot or they're striking out, whatever their quality or plate discipline metrics are what they are. But then you look at their aggressiveness or not aggressiveness at the plate, because then you compare it to the contact skills. As you dig in on that, like on a Fangraphs or a Savant thing, that's pretty telling. So I've said that a lot with players, like swing the bat more or stuff like that. Just swing it more. We live in a world of strikeouts, like embrace it a little bit. I'm like, I don't want to strike it out 40% of the time, but if you're a 16% K guy, 22% might actually benefit you because you're going to do a lot more damage while you're hacking type things.
So, exactly. Yeah. Like with Lars Nootbaar, like he's the only player in even the general vicinity of Juan Soto when it comes to just overall swing rate. Yeah. And like, I love Lars Nootbaar and I think he's going to be great this year, but he's not that guy.
Yep.
Like just swing the bat. You're going to be okay.
Yep. I'm with you. I'm 100% with you. I've liked Newt for a couple of years. It's frustrating watching him because, you know, the skills are there and it's just not utilizing them. We have a question in the chat I want to get to real quick before we maybe forget about it. Jimmy says, how do you predict a potential breakout? Like seeing someone predict Joey Ortiz to have a Zach Neto type breakout, I guess, how could you use Process Plus to maybe predict a breakout? Is it similar to the way you saw the Crawford improvements improvements, or is there something else?
Yeah, Joey Ortiz is interesting because he always, he didn't really pop as much as I necessarily thought. But what's interesting with Ortiz is that there was just a significant change from the first half to the second half. So in the first half of the year, he had this exceptional contact and league average decision-making and below average power. And then when we got into the second half, his decision-making kind of fell off a cliff, and that came at exchange for contact. But it's just a significant skills change. It's completely different from what we saw, which I think is kind of how we use a stat like this to identify a breakout. Even if the things don't fully line up the way you expect, if you see a player doing something different, that's always worth a second look. And I think a rolling chart, I mean, generally is the best way to identify a skills change. But with Process Plus, it's most unique in that it shows it kind of overall. Whereas if you throw on a WRC Plus rolling chart for any given player, you know, their highs are going to be when they hit 3 homers in a week, and their lows are going to be when they struck out 40% of the time. Like, that doesn't really tell you anything other than that they ended at, you know, say a 110 WRC Plus. So being able to, you know, see that the rolling chart has vastly differed in a significant way than what it has been before really kind of, you know, opens your eyes to, you know, a Joey Ortiz has changed significantly. He's worth taking a second look at. Or, you know, Zach Neto, I haven't really looked at his Process Plus stuff, and I'm just pulling it up now. Looking at it now, he started making more contact, and while maintaining the same amount of decisions or the same level of decision making. So Neto's a guy where, you know, you see this spike in contact and power, and that's worth a second look. Is he doing something that he's swinging a lot more? Is he getting more aggressive? Is he just developing? He's a young guy. But generally, I would just say that the identifying where the rolling chart doesn't necessarily make sense, where it starts to do something that you wouldn't necessarily expect. And I think that's true for even the non-Process Plus rolling charts.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you see, especially on the hitting side, you see a fly ball rate go to, you know, a career high or a career low or a pull rate or something like that. That is always worth the second look, and usually more often than not can indicate that a player is about to break out or not, because if they haven't succeeded just doing what they were already doing, there, you know, there's a low likelihood that that's the reason that they're going to pop.
Yeah. And I just want to highlight again what you were saying there about the rolling charts is, like, you can go to Fangraphs, you can create with 3, 4, 5 stats, whatever you want, because my good buddy, Baffet Crazy Toby G, he lives on the rolling graphs, and it's helped him a ton. And they're super valuable to see those peaks and valleys. But one thing I love, like, about the Process Plus is that rolling chart is 3 metrics that actually, to me, encompasses more than 3 stats. So that's why it's a very, very interesting thing. And then to your Zach Neto point, which would make me very curious to look at some more, because I love Neto. He's injured, obviously, right now, so it's kind of a turn off to drafting him, but the power did spike last year. But like you mentioned, that the decisions was essentially the same. He has made more contact with more power, so it's what changed in that regard is what. And at the same time, if he's still making the same decisions, can he quickly go the other direction? Because like the decisions are this, if he's doing the same thing up there, maybe he just got hot last year and, you know, was crushing everything, and that's a very interesting thing to look at.
Yeah. I mean, Neto is another guy where there's bad decision making, and I think anecdotally you just kind of see that when he plays, that there's a lot of swing and miss to his game, and it doesn't, you know, he's got the funky leg kick, and for some reason, like, I'm not sure if it's going to stick. And especially with a shoulder injury like he had, I'm really worried a guy like Neto doesn't bring back the power that he had previously, and that he quickly kind of falls off the face of fantasy relevance.
Yep. I have not drafted him last year, and he helped me a lot. I wanted to draft him this year, but that news has scared me completely off of Zach Neto. One question I have for you before we answer the next question in the chat here. The last part of your article involves team process. And I think this is interesting because sometimes when we'll flip this to the pitching side of things, when you're looking into stream pitchers or you're looking at different factors, you look about like, how's the team doing as a whole? So now if we're looking at team process plus, and, you know, obviously maybe there's ballpark factors involved that what that team's playing well, so on and so forth. Who knows? But how could you utilize Team Process Plus to help you in the fantasy world?
I think so. I don't have access kind of as free flowing for the team stuff as I do for the players kind of on our, in our PL Pro tools, you know, what's available. But with the Team Process Plus, I think it's most interesting on a year-to-year basis. And I think it's not necessarily for fantasy purposes, but rather for just general baseball analysis. Hopefully identifying how, you know, how coaching or something like that is really affecting a team. Because a lot of the hitter process, like for example, for 2024, when we wrote this article, the Yankees had a 141 process plus, which ranked first by like 15 points. And unsurprisingly, that is just because Juan Soto and Aaron Judge are on the Yankees. Yeah. That doesn't tell you something tangible about the Yankees. But if you look kind of year to year at a team or a coaching staff, especially with decision making and maybe contact, are things changing significantly? And being able to identify, are they clearly improving players on the right things, or are players failing to improve at the right things? Anecdotally speaking, I have no idea what the St. Louis Cardinals offense is going to be this year, but they made a lot of really bad decisions last year at the plate. And that might be an understatement. And I'm wondering with, you know, they have a new hitting coach in, do you see a handful of players, individual decision-making take a step forward? Are they hearing something new? And obviously that can't all be coaching staff. You know, what if a player went to Driveline or, you know, is just developing, but I think this could be a very interesting proxy for identifying, potential, you know, skills of a hitting coach or an organizational philosophy.
No, that makes a ton of sense. I was the first thing that popped in when you started explaining it more to me was when I think it was Derek Shelton went to the Rangers as a hitting coach, and he just got done being a hitting coach, I think, for the Giants when they turned things around a few years before that. And it was one of those deals where that'd be an interesting one to watch, like a year to year, or even if it's just like a half season, what's the improvements or not type things, the impacts like he's had on the coaching staff, as you mentioned. All right, couple more questions I have for you here, and then we'll get to the listener question that's not as much Process Plus based, but fantasy based, which we'll get to. What are you looking to do with Process Plus? I know it's not just you; it's a pitcherless product, and so on and so forth. But you're utilizing it in your drafts. You probably obviously utilize it in your articles, or at least to get you to where you need to go in your articles. What's your kind of excitement or hopes or utilization of Process Plus for 2025?
I think just getting a full season's worth of data behind it. I obviously can't fully speak for what the future plans of something like that are, because it is really Kyle Bland, the mastermind of it all, plotting behind it. But really being able to see, as we have some historic data accessible, but really seeing, you know, how the year develops, more, you know, as a fantasy player, not necessarily an analyst, you know, do I get any utility of looking at the first 100 pitches faced? And
that's, you know, what I want to know. Yes,
like, 100%. Can I get to jump on, you know, on a player, on a new skill change, like, which I don't know, because that's something that, you know, I no doubt that there could be tests and analyses run on that. But a lot of that will come from just experience. Like, I'm going to end up overpaying for someone in Fab because, you know, the process chart told me to. And if it works, it's going to, you know, I'll continue to rely on it. But I really, you know, I think that'll just come from true utility of having this accessible. Whereas obviously we didn't before, and I feel like my hitter analysis is a lot more consolidated going forward because of how easy this is to use compared to what it's been in the past.
Yeah, I definitely need to dig in on it some more from my utilization, because I was doing when PLV came really going strong last offseason. Like, it's obviously been there, but I utilized it to write like 3 offseason articles. Like, Tanner Bibee was looking at his, broke down so much for me to like dig in on him and see the improvements, to see all it needed was a slight pitch mix change, so on and so forth. So you could do something similar with Process Plus, is where I'm getting at, which you've obviously hit on in all of this. But I need to find a way to utilize that more to dig in. But also the part I'm looking forward to is kind of what you mentioned, is when can we know to try to get ahead of the crew type thing? Because that's obviously in seasons one of the most important parts to all this. Like, when can we jump on this analysis and make it actual usage in things as well? All right. Logan's question in the chat here is, what up, fellas? Big fan of both y'all's work. How would you guys weigh the option of potential young guys cracking opening day roster spots? Example, Matt Shaw versus Cam Smith. Well, I'll give you the floor here, but Matt Shaw is going to Japan. That was official about an hour or two ago. So looks like he's making a team, at least for now. But what's your thoughts on those two prospects making the team?
I really like both of them. I think it would be really aggressive to put Cam Smith on this Astros team. I know when I got the notification that Cam Smith is now getting outfield reps, that seems very serious and very imminent. And truly, I don't think obviously he had a great end of last year. He seems like a guy who, you know, he popped, he got traded team loves him. You know, are we witnessing a star that everyone's going to get 1 year of drafting at a discount? That being this year, and then it's just off to the races. So I'm really big on Cam Smith, especially if he makes the roster. Matt Shaw, I also love. I I don't want to toot my own horn too much, but these were the two guys I've targeted in most of my FYPD first rounds this year and last year. So I'm glad to have gotten both of them a bunch. But I think Matt Shaw is just going to be a true 5 category contributor. And I think he has a really, really solid floor that I think you're going to see from the start, because he seems ready. And I don't think the Cubs were eager to block his path on getting to the big league team.
Yep. They've done everything this offseason to have Matt Shaw be the starting third baseman. The oblique injury set things back a bit, but looks like he's ready to roll. And they announced he's going to Japan. So I'm with you on all of that. And the Cam Smith thing's interesting, because for Baseball HQ, I write the AL West Playing Time Tomorrow column once a week. So I talk about the Astros weekly, and I have to try to think of ideas of how certain guys can get playing time. And this week, Cam Smith was actually in it. And that was before this outfield stuff came out, which made me laugh, because I'm thinking, okay, you know, he's supposed to be a third baseman. And in a perfect world, like Isak Preda, they've joked about moving to second base if they sign Bregman. So if they really like Cam Smith, he can move to second. Brendan Rodgers shouldn't stop this. Let's just be real. And then I'm like, well, no, now Christian Walker's hurt. Cam Smith could play first base. That's another angle to all of this. And now this outfield stuff, because ever since they traded Kyle Tucker, they have had nothing. Like, Altuve can't play left field. Like, let's just stop that. But they're going to do it. So
yeah, they're going to try.
Yeah, they're going to do it, but just crazy talk to me. But we'll see. Like, Cam Smith, I'm with you. Like, I think it's an aggressive move, like a really aggressive move. But it seems like they're really trying to do it, to your point of, they're giving him reps in the off. Like, he played 5 innings in a minor league game on Tuesday when we're recording. And he's got DH on Wednesday, they said, and actually play in a Cactus League game in right field on Thursday. So they're moving it pretty fast with this one.
Yeah, I will say really quick, just on I don't need to necessarily loop everything in here about the Cardinals, but I think there's a really strong parallel here with Jordan Walker's rise to the big leagues. Obviously, Nolan Arenado was at third, so Jordan Walker was told, if you want to be on this team ASAP, you're moving to the outfield. Mm-hmm. And he tried to make that adjustment, but it's really difficult to become a major league quality defender, even at a corner outfield position, basically overnight. And I think that definitely took away from his hitting development, because he was, you know, had to focus so much more on defense than almost any other top prospect trying to break through could. So I think there is something to be said that, you know, Cam Smith could get overwhelmed with a new position and a new, you know, and big league pitching all in, I don't know how many major league at-bats or minor league at-bats he's gotten, but it's not many. He's been a pro for half a season. So I think there is definitely reason to be a little bit cautious. But, I mean, if I had to pick, I would be more all steam ahead or all whatever ahead.
Yeah, no, I'm 100% with you on that because there's been a ton of these guys. They want to get them up, so let's move them to this position or this position. And, oh, they're athletes. I can figure it out. And it's a pet peeve of mine. Like, these are young guys just trying to figure out professional pitching. Now we're giving them a new glove. Like, this is a bad idea to me. So we'll see. Like, Jordan Walker still super young. And you'd obviously know a lot more about him watching him every day. And now he's knee because of a sprinkler situation, which is just so – let's just continue to like prevent Jordan Walker from being Jordan Walker out of all ways. But he's one I've slowly gotten excited about this year. I've never been a Jordan Walker guy in drafts. But man, now he's got to figure out how to fix his knee. So fun stuff there. All right. I have one more question. I'm going to ask you about your most recent article because I'm very curious about this player. And we've wrapped up Process Plus, everybody. Awesome stuff there. We'll highlight that in a second, but you mentioned Zebby Matthews because you just wrote a deep dive on him. And it's a player that I've really been curious about because you look at the Twins rotation right now, they have Paddock and SWR, Simeon Wood Richardson, at the 4-5, while you have David Festa and Zebby Matthews on the outside looking in who are probably, let's just say, better than the other two, like his grand scheme of things. Outside of Zebby Matthews' injury, which he's already working back from, I'm not too concerned. In your deep dive, what did you find out about Zebby that I remember when he got called up last year, even Nick was like pumping it up. The minor league numbers were insane, but obviously transition to the big stuff's taken a little while.
Yeah, so I think we just need to see him flex the command that we've heard so much about. This was a guy who all throughout the minors, like he was always like a sub 3% walk rate, which is just absolutely insane. And that jumped to 6% in the bigs, which, 6% is still below league average, but is double for a guy who didn't give out many or really any free passes at the minor league level. And mix that with the reports that his stuff was good but not great makes me think that this wasn't a guy who was just like, I have better stuff than you. I'm throwing it down the middle. Good luck hitting it. I think he was actually pitching and getting success. And when he got to the big leagues, he had, I think it was like two or three really good starts to start his big league tenure, had strikeouts, limited walks. And then he had one start where there was 9 earned runs and there was another one with 6 where there were just a lot of pitches down the middle that just got absolutely tattooed. So like, I think having a little bit of major league experience under his belt is going to do him really well. The pitches looked good. He flashed this great plan where he goes fastballs kind of up and in, and then working with the cutter kind of at the edge of the zone, and then this just wipeout slider beneath the zone that I really think there's a big league arsenal in there. I think he just needs to be a little more confident. I think he can work his way to the edges a little bit more. He doesn't need to concede as much as he had, and, if he doesn't run a 6% walk rate, I think we're going to see a very successful season for Matthews whenever he gets that role in Minnesota.
Good to hear. I was hoping you were going to go that direction with that. So excellent there. All right. That'll wrap us up, Nate. This has been an absolute joy chatting with you about this. The floor is yours. Any final thoughts on Process Plus, on the 2025 season coming up, anything? Plug what you got, and we'll wrap it up there.
Yeah, all I got is you can find me at PitcherList, writing weekly, player deep dives, data deep dives, you name it. I'll be there all season long. Highly recommend you check out the suite of PLV-infused and Process Plus-infused apps we have over at PitcherList. It is really just, amazing data, and I feel so lucky that as a PitcherList staffer that I get to use it for my work, and I cannot endorse it enough. So just really excited to kind of finally move on from all of my draft prep and draft analysis and finally get into new stats and new things going on. Cause I think we're all starting to chomp at the bit, waiting for it to get started.
Yep. I'm with you. I registered for my last couple of drafts, so that's about it. And, before you know it, we'll be watching some real baseball. Like in a week from today, the Japan series starts. So we got that going. And then it's like a week after that, we'll have everybody playing, which is pretty sweet as well. But Nate, thanks for joining me, man. It was great chatting with you. Love the work at Pitcherlist. Love everything Pitcherlist.com does in general. It's always nice to talk to me, their new faces, because I've been hanging out with Nick and company for a long time. So I always like seeing the new crew every year that when they do the announcements of all the new writers and everything. And you've been there for at least a year now, right?
This is going to be my fourth season.
Fourth. God, I'm sorry. Apologies.
Yeah, man. No worries. It's flown by.
Yeah. So that's awesome. That's awesome. And now you're an FSWA award winner. So
yeah, time flies. And yeah, thank you so much for having me on. It's always, always really neat to join a fantasy creator who's been in the space as established as you are, and very, very neat opportunity.
No, yeah, we'll do it again sometime. I'd love to talk with you. Good stuff. I always, like I said, one thing about Pitcherlist writers like yourself is you guys are always putting stuff out there when it catches my eye on X or Twitter. That's when I go, okay, I make a note. I need to have so-and-so on the show someday. So that's how like I make my list. And then in my goofy schedule, whenever it finally fits, it happens. But I appreciate you. We'll do it again sometime. And everybody, thanks for listening. This was Benched with Bubba, episode 751. Process Plus and More with Nate Schwartz. Catch y'all next time.